I'm super excited too, and I had it on my calendar. Like I had like a 2 hour window after lunch and before this to get out and buy something with it. I have the app downloaded and everything ready to go, and I couldn't get out to spend anything, but I will be doing it this evening.
It's because of the no NFC thing, it's got to be a pain in the ass in person. But the good thing is you can, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, later. Although, you can, some of these restaurants have like a pay by phone thing where the receipt comes with a QR code you can scan and get into their little online payment thingy and pay right from your table that way. And also, you can put the card into something like a Walmart's app or Target's app, and then use their Walmart or Target Pay to like scan the QR code at the
Interesting.
register and do it that way. And so there's workarounds, even though there's no NFC today, to like spending it in person. And I can't wait to see like, how everyone kind of takes care of this sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean,
Do you guys see
ironically,
it?
I'm kind of a physical person, so as soon as we can get that card for $5, like that's my route.
Well, yeah, that's also the thing. And I'm definitely a fiat dinosaur because I kind of like exited the system like a better part of a decade ago. It's so
Right.
back then in the US, they were just getting around to using chip cards, and like it was almost all swipe with some
Right.
chip. Now I hear there's a lot of tap. I don't pay enough attention to see there's a lot of NFC, but there are still some places where you do have to swipe. And just like, what if your phone dies and you just can't pay now? It's like a little like, I don't know. It's good to have a physical card too, even though, hopefully we won't have to use it that much. But, it's a great time. It's a lot of good stuff. So yeah, with Dash Direct, and then with obviously, hopefully, Platform, whatever, in Evolution, whatever ends up being called, coming out this year, and then Thorchain, like full steam ahead in that direction. For Dash in particular, it's just starting to get really busy. And I think we're finally at a spot where Dash is developing a lot of really good end user products, and the actual like promo and marketing behind that is nowhere near where it should be based on how good these things are. And so that's just like a mountain of work ahead of us. It's a happy mountain of work because
Yeah,
we're,
and but well, I mean, it's a lot of it's going to fall on me. So talk about pressure.
Yeah, it's
Like,
like
I get it.
I'm gonna have you back on here every couple months, and every couple
Yeah.
months, like the circles under your eyes are gonna get darker.
No,
Sorry,
yeah,
I'm
no,
not
you're,
foreshadowing anything, but
yeah, you're not going to be far from the truth, I'm sure.
Well, it looks like there's enough viewers now. There's a few on YouTube, a few on Odyssey. So I'm just gonna roll the intro graphic, do the intro. We just get right into it. So, hey everyone, happy Friday, or happy 5 minutes from now if you watched the last podcast. Hope you've really had a great week, and it's time to launch in the weekend with some, with the newest and brightest addition to the Dash ecosystem. But
I
if,
appreciate that. I don't know if that's
yes.
warranted, but sure. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm joined by the one and only Chris is Howe. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
It's actually Huff, but
Yeah,
neither
Chris
here nor
Huff.
there.
There we go. Well, I'm glad I only made that mistake one time on there, but
No, no worries.
So, before we launch into like your life story and all that kind of stuff, just pointing out
Yeah,
everyone,
absolutely.
obviously, like, comment, share, subscribe, the things that every YouTuber has to say. And if you want to ask questions and stuff and talk in the live chat, we have a live chat on both of those. But if you want to fast track it to the head of the thing, you got to go to cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, drop a little donation in Dash, and then that'll pop up on the screen and I'll read that live. So now that I've kind of showed everyone what's going on, so yeah, Chris, tell me about yourself, which is by the way, the worst question ever. I hate it when people ask it like that. But why don't you explain what your like in briefly what your professional background is, and then how you got interested in crypto and involved in crypto, and then we'll just go to the Dash part of that.
Sure. I mean, it all kind of ties in with my story, right? It's much more of a journey than a one-off you know, piece of the story, so to speak. But so yeah, I think I ended up at Dash because of my entrepreneurial spirit, right? So when I actually applied, and we'll get into that Dash Core group, when I actually applied, and we can get into that later, I think it was looked highly that I was going to bring some entrepreneurial talent to the team, right? Much different vantage point than kind of your cookie cutter, somebody who maybe hasn't done their own thing or hasn't traveled the path of, you know, more difficult resistance, let's say, right?
Yeah, of course.
So, so with me, you know, let's take it all the way back to 2005, if we want.
I remember and that it's really year. Funny. It was a good year.
Yeah, it was an interesting year for me. So 2005, I was actually a junior in college. I went to a little college down here in Florida, where I am actually now, but a little school called Southeastern. And what's funny is that, or not funny, just given my background, right? I've been an avid surfer for a very long time. And I'm not sure how I did this, but I blew out my back really bad when I was in college. And I had to have double herniated disc back surgery. Oof. So, so I was walking around like with a cane with the tennis balls on the bottom and like everything. And so, you know,
the walker,
try doing that while you're in school and everybody else running around doing crazy stuff and you're having a hard time walking. But, so I think it actually was because of that, right? So really couldn't do much. And I'm in this entrepreneurship class and the whole thing is a class project on building a mock business, right? And not super exciting. You know, I think it was like once or twice a week. So the class was like either 2 or 4 hours. I mean, it was brutal. And we would just go through different pieces of creating a mock business, right? Whether that's the getting the investors or the business plan or the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So here I am and I'm in this class and I really am not distracted by much because I'm on this walker like an 80-year-old with the tennis balls on the bottom and whatnot. But so being not really growing up surfing, but being pretty avid into the surf world at that point in 2005, my mind was blown on the lack of the ability to purchase any surf gear on the internet whatsoever, right? We had just kind of gone through the dot-com crash. So any online stores there were kind of got wiped out. I mean, there was some stuff here or there. I don't remember like eBay specifically, but I don't think Amazon was around yet. Google really got rolling in like 2003. So that was kind of a new experiment, even being able to search on the internet, right? And so
Yahoo and GeoCities and stuff back then.
Yeah, I mean, AOL like was still a thing, right? I mean,
just,
like,
Jeeves, we're way back.
We're way back there. And Ask Jeeves. And then it got rebranded to Ask, I think. But anyway, so I'm in this class and, you know, just to kind of get through it, I'm like, well, I'm going to do my mock business on an online surf shop because like I said, there was nothing. So that's kind of how, I don't know where my story starts, I guess. So in this class, I do all the research, you know, really just do it well. There's no tests, there's no quizzes. You're just graded on your project. So kind of with lack of anything else to do because of my current predicament, I really kind of poured into this thing and presented. And the professor said something pretty profound to me, which was, hey, you know, you've done all of the hard work, all the market analysis, all the research, all these things, you should do this. And that kind of hit me because I had put a lot of work into it. And it was like, okay, you get an A in the class and that's the end of it, or take a shot at it and see what happens, right? So I think it was July 1st, 2020, the Surfboard Warehouse was founded and it was an online surf shop and nothing like it was being done. So trying to kind of secure these contracts with companies that everybody might recognize, a Billabong or a Quiksilver or Hurley, plus all these little companies that actually made like the hard goods, was not easy. Right. I had to have an address. And so it's funny because my dorm room had a box number 201. So I just used it as suite 201 with the school's address. And like no one ever like figured it out. Like, yeah, they thought it was like some suite somewhere. And so by my senior year, I'm shipping surf gear to and from my dorm room. And this thing's like taking off. Like there's potential here, right? So I just kind of let this play out. And it doesn't sound so amazing now because now like people are spoiled. If you want an online store, like go to eBay and or Amazon and throw some stuff up and you're good. Yeah, but then we had to like design out like how we're going to take credit cards and all these things that you don't worry about anymore, and different security issues that came along with that. And we may even be taking phone orders in the beginning. I don't remember. I mean, it was pretty bad. But yeah, it was nuts. It was more like phone catalog order type stuff in the beginning. But lo and behold, because there was nothing else, this thing kind of took root, right? And it started doing well. So, you know, graduate college and I'm doing this thing and had some part-time jobs while it's kind of growing, but it didn't take long. By 2008, certainly by 2010, like we were starting to become a force to be reckoned with, right? And so it was the world's first online surf shop. And I will get around to how this, I think, qualifies me in the crypto space, right? We'll get there. So things are going well. In surfing, surfboard fins are removable. And they did that in the 90s so that when you surfed, you can stack your boards when you travel so that the fins don't break off. And that quickly morphed into this situation where, wow, if we change the size and template and shape of fins, it'll drastically change how the board surfs. So it was kind of this one invention that's really happened in the surf industry in the last forever. I mean, they're dinosaurs that things don't really change too much. And so that was a big deal. And so by 2008, I had some customer service guys and they're wasting all their time talking to people about fins. I mean, every day, day in and day out, 4 or 5 hours of their 8 hours was spent with somebody calling, asking fin questions. So here I am, how are we going to solve this problem? Like this is horrendous. I mean, it really was not getting anything done. And so I literally woke up in the middle of the night and I was like, someone needs to design a program like Netflix. And we're talking about DVDs in the mail, right? Not the new digital Netflix. And yeah, but old for school Netflix. Yeah. So how would this work? Like, what would the subscription model look like? And I think renting is a cheap word, so we call it fin testing program.
And of course, and fintech would come later, but you know.
Yes.
I just had to get that pun in.
Yes, that's the running joke over here at DCG. Is like I went from fintech to fintech, which. Neither one of them have anything to do with the other. But so now here we are, 2008. I'm building out this program. This is where I already had kind of an intro into like some programming stuff back when getting the surfboard warehouse online. But this was different. This was no cookie cutter. Nothing existed. Programming teams, Bangladesh, India, different time zones, translations. You know, how do we do this? How do we make it work? And so the Surfboard Warehouse at this point was financing my endeavor to build this sister company that was this rental program. And that's where a lot of my experience comes in with working with new technology, building new technology. What are the problems? How do we fix them? One interesting thing we came across, which it still like surprises me. But so in online shopping or in any business in the United States, there's this term PCI compliance, which is where you're not supposed to store credit card numbers. It's really just a sham to milk you for extra fees. But but so the point is, how do you have a recurring billing software without storing credit card numbers? So that got deep into the weeds of, well, there was a merchant service provider that actually could store credit cards for you, and they had some API calls, right? So this almost parallels platform, like if we get into how that looks and feels and operates. But so we had to figure out all these API calls for all these results with credit cards and then build on our front end what would happen when it returned credit card successful, not charged, like, you know, or declined for this reason or that reason, and what do we return to the customer and what does the software do? Anyway, so this thing turned into this beast of a program. I mean, it tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lines of code, API calling with merchant service providers and UPS and post office and all kinds of inventory systems that we had internally. I mean, it was honestly a work of art. I mean, it was fantastic. So you fast forward and I had one customer service guy now running this program for thousands of people with thousands of sets of fins and hundreds of shipments on any given day coming in, going out, and one person running it. And so right, problem solved, like the need to evolve. So here we are. I now have two companies in the surf industry that kind of feed off each other. You get into 2012, we bought a 4,100 square foot warehouse. We ran with about $500,000 of inventory, right? The whole just in time inventory thing. We certainly could have run with more, but it just didn't make sense. And so here we are, and I would say around 2015, 2017, somewhere in there, like we arguably became the world's largest online surf shop, especially when we're talking about hard goods and certain categories, surfboard bags.
Which is pretty significant. The world's largest anything is big. And the fact that everyone knows what surfing is, whereas like not everyone knows what like curling is, for example, means it's like, that's a pretty major achievement.
Yeah, it was fun. Like I did the whole thing. My wife and I, so she, once we got out of school and we got married, so she worked for me. We had 3 or 4 full-time employees, a couple of part-time employees and all kinds of contractors with the programming and stuff. But my wife and I won a contest, a sales contest with Body Glove, and stayed on the North Shore for 2 weeks and surfed pipe before a competition. And just like literally we did the whole thing. And, so where this kind of, this dawns on me, the tech piece, again, it's going to tie in. Just give me a minute. It'll all come full circle. So in early 2017, that's when I found out about crypto and was instantly like enamored by this idea of a different form of sound money, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have gold and silver and that's considered sound money. And we went off the gold standard, and my biggest mistake ever, I think it was more of a planned mistake. And ever since then, right, spending out of control. And now all of a sudden you kind of introduce Bitcoin and these other technologies where there's a finite supply. And it struck a chord with me. And so I started looking into it. I built all the computers that my staff used. Most of them had 3 to 5 monitors, like just completely custom built these systems so they could do as much as possible. So I said, you know what, I'm going to build some mining machines, right, for Ethereum. We have this warehouse, I have the space, the heat's not an issue, sound's not an issue. I'm going to take my shot at building some miners. So I did a whole bunch of research and thought to myself that the ones that you could buy pre-made, I didn't like the amount of electricity they were using, right? I didn't like some of the designs that they had. I had a friend that was a pretty brilliant computer programmer. So he kind of helped me, and we built some pretty awesome Ethereum miners. And so ran those for probably a year and a half, around 2017 to 2018, maybe something like that. So so around this time, 2017, a lot of different things happened, right? We had a lot of momentum in the surf industry. Everybody in the surf industry kind of knew the Surfboard Warehouse and Fanatic. And there's some interesting parallels with Fanatic too, with technology. So, you know, everybody thinks when you design technology, you need to patent what you're doing, right? Or trademark it, or do something to protect yourself. Well, that's a problem to me. Like that just seems like a waste of money. So when I started Fanatic, my thought was, well, nobody else is doing this. I'm going to go to the fin manufacturers and basically say, hey, listen, I want to develop this new market for you guys. I'm going to buy a ton of fins, but I'd like some exclusive agreements stating that nobody else can test or rent fins online. And I was buying a ton of fins. They all agreed. So what's interesting is we had competition started popping up, you know, as soon as we proved the model to be successful. And I was shutting these people down with a phone call. I mean, no joke. I would call the fin manufacturer, say, hey, I don't know who this is with a kind of competing service, but we need to get them to knock it off. And they'd make a few phone calls, find who was buying fins from them, and then renting them or testing them online, and tell them, hey, we can let you buy fins, but you can't do this. And if you continue, we can't sell to you anymore. So, right. So then this other business owner, whoever out there, has to decide, like, do I want to sacrifice my existing business of retail for this kind of new thing I'm trying to copy?
So it's kind of like market-based patents almost. It's not like a government-based where you just say, we own this and we go to jail if you do it too. It's like, we did this and we set up business, relationships where you can do the same thing, but it's just risky because you've already set up, you know, agreements and stuff with other people.
Right. And so that's, you know, that's where like relationships are huge, right? You can bring that into now with all kinds of parallels with Dash and different exchanges and things. I mean, if you have a good relationship and if you have trust and if you prove yourself, and certainly if you're making other people money, things can be done to improve your situation against your competition. I mean, that's just the nature of relationships, right? So there's a lot there that I can kind of bring to this equation. So so we were able to shut down our competition. So this thing operated in a vacuum, and we were able to refine this software really, really well and do this job really, really well. And so people outside of the surf industry kind of took notice, and through a set of coincidences, I ran into a guy who said he owned a marketing company, and maybe there was something there with Fnatic. We'd start talking about it. So I said, yeah, that sounds good. And so we exchanged information, and I honestly forgot about it. I really did. Mm-hmm. And so 2 weeks later, I get a, this is probably 2017. 2 weeks later, I get a call from this guy, and we start talking, and I realize it's not some marketing company. He owned the, at the time, the world's second largest marketing company. I think he had 850 people under him on staff and 6 locations on 3 continents. I mean, you know, just insane, next level stuff. And he was very interested in Fnatic, and I couldn't really get it at why, and kind of cut the conversation short after a lot of explaining and back and forth. And he says, yeah, you know, I have a business partner that might really be interested in this. Can we have a call with you? And so I said, sure, you know, not a problem. And again, honestly, I forgot about it. And maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, he schedules a call with me, and they're both on the phone, and he lets his business partner introduce himself, and legitimate billionaire. Like, the guy started a CD, DVD, and book distribution company in the early 90s. It grew, and I think by the 2000s, he was doing $1 billion a year in revenue with $100 million in profit. I mean, some astronomical numbers, right? And then the statement comes out that brings all this together. And, oh, by the way, my distribution company bought the parent company that owns all of the action sports magazines, including Surfer, Surfing, Trans World Surf, right? And so there's kind of, now I understand what these two guys are thinking, right? They have control of these magazines. They have a one-of-a-kind program that I'm kind of bringing to the table with some excitement there. There's an online surf shop piece that can be tacked in somehow. So we start brainstorming what this looks like. Well, then kind of some people in the surf industry get wind of this, and the world's second largest surfboard manufacturer out in California called Firewire express interest in being part of a deal if there's one to be had. And with Fnatic, we were promoting it with a world champion surfer from 2001. He's about my age and became a good friend of mine through contacts in the industry or whatnot. But he was kind of, we were promoting it with him, and he said, yeah, if there's a deal to be had, I want in too. So next thing you know, I kind of negotiate this deal where I keep 42% of the company, and these other four parties, right? This mogul investor, this marketing company, a world championship surfer, and the world's largest surfboard manufacturer all split 48% of Fnatic. So, you know, I'm still in control. And now I find myself on these board meetings and you know, calls with these guys that, right? Like, I shouldn't even be in the same room as these people. Like, this was a just class project, right? I surf and I enjoy it. And I, you know, wanted to, right? Passion project type thing. So now we're really like grinding full force, and there were some deals to be had, and Surfer magazine, this guy ended up selling it, so things kind of stalled. So long story short, like, my wife and I, the plan was, when this deal was made, we were going to take a step back and more manage this company and hire a bunch of people and take it easy. I mean, we had been working 60 hours a week plus for a very, very long time, very limited vacations. You know, we wanted things done right, so we were always there, always working. And so we want to take a step back. Well, once this deal was done, we realized really quickly, like, it got worse, not better, right? There's money here, huge expectations, lots of kind of different opinions, which is fine. And there really was no animosity, but just not real cohesion, and just things weren't being done as they were promised. And right. And there's some stories there maybe that the community can relate to, so then in 2019, the Surfboard Warehouse really was at its peak. 2017, 2018 was funky, and 2019 sales fell off a cliff, and my wife and I are being run ragged. And I literally decided October 2019, right? Like, this is done. This isn't fun. This isn't the path that I had set out on. This became a monster that I couldn't control anymore, right? And so I called a board meeting, board of directors, whatever you want to call it. And I literally said, kind of out of the blue to them, like, hey, I'm done. And obviously the response was, what do you mean you're done? And I said, yeah, this isn't what I bargained for, you know. And of course, you know, that didn't go over well, but take a vote. I own 52%. So this is over. And so there were some thoughts of selling off these pieces to the various people involved, but they didn't want to put any more money in and felt kind of without my expertise that they didn't have somebody to replace me and all these different things. So no sale ever happened. And we had a lot of inventory. And so me and my wife are trying to figure out how to wind this thing down. And, you know, I tell everybody this, but I'm a God-fearing man. So you can take this stuff as coincidence or divine intervention, however your personal opinions are on that. But at the end of October 2019, a man walks into our warehouse and tells us he would like to buy our warehouse cash, right? Nice. Like, never really talked to this guy before in my life, random set of events. And so, of course, you know, here's kind of an out for us. And so we negotiate a sale price and want to close on December 31st, 2019, to which he agreed with a 6 weeks window rent free to sell all of our about $500,000 worth of surf gear and be done. So that took us to February 15th, 2020. So all this stuff actually happened how it should. We shut down the business and we're out February 2020, the 15th, 2020. And March 1st, surfing was banned worldwide. So yeah. you're talking 2 weeks, right? We had 2 weeks and I don't know if we would have survived going through the pandemic. I mean, everybody, right? We're still kind of still muddling through this whole mess. But yeah, of course. So my wife and I, we had our second kid March 24th, 2020. That was the first day of lockdowns. That's how I know how long this has kind of been going on, right? The new normal we're getting pushed into. And so we had sold the warehouse. We'd sold through all our inventory. We were able to kind of sit and enjoy the new baby as much as you can. You know, you don't get much sleep when that stuff goes on. But yeah, so you're in the middle of this mess. Both of us didn't know what we were going to do. We didn't have any jobs. I did a lot of consulting for actually a drone company in 2020 and early 2021. A friend of mine had a guy who owned a drone company and they were designing some software. So I helped them. And right, but like, what's next? So we kind of took it easy through 2020. You're not going to find many people hiring in that mess. So 2021 comes along and trying to figure out what's next, right? And so I really did a lot of thinking and soul searching and whatever and came to the conclusion that I've been in crypto a while. I researched a lot of the projects. I built my own miners. I have a pretty good foundation of how all this stuff works, at least a 20,000 foot view, right? Outside of the industry, right? And so I start thinking, well, I'll see if any of my favorite projects are hiring. So I start poking around towards the middle of last year. And Dash originally, I don't think, had any job openings. So I kind of skipped around or Dash Core Group and skipped around and came back to it at some point. And there was a job posting. I don't even remember what the job was, but I applied and I got an email back that like I wasn't a good fit for the position. So me being me, I'm not the person that takes no for an answer usually. So, you know, I email back and I was basically like, are you sure like this doesn't work? Because I feel like I can bring a lot to the table. And, you know, if I kind of get an idea of what's going on, I can tell you how I might be able to help or be an asset or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that turned into some phone calls. Right. And then all of a sudden I kind of get rumblings that maybe they can make a position for me. Cause there's a need for an entrepreneurial spirit, like I said, and kind of someone who's started a company from nothing and grown it and exited it and done from A to Z, right? Did the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so it boiled down to, all right, here's the thing. We're going to send you some questions about how you would handle some things with concerning Dash. And you write us something up and let us see it. And if we like it, you got the job. So I said, all right. So I'll never forget it. It was towards the end of last year. Mm-hmm. The email came back and it was a good half a page of some really kind of tough questions. And I remember after dinner, like I got it after dinner, I remember sitting down and just starting plugging away. So 8:30 PM, I start writing. I'm not kidding you. Probably I didn't look up. It was till 4 AM. I look up. I had this 8-10 page paper done. I thought it was pretty good, but I was exhausted. So I went to sleep for a couple hours, woke back up, spell checked it, kind of made sure everything made sense. And I sent it back. So within less than 12 hours, I think, of getting kind of these questions, I had it. I had the stuff back to the guys at DCG. And so very quickly, yeah, I got an email back that, hey, yeah, this is good. Like if you're interested, the job is yours. So anyway, so that's how I ended up here. I didn't actually start until about 6 weeks ago. There was some stuff with end of the year stuff that they wanted to close up before I got brought on. And so, yeah, here I am and here we are, and you're introducing, or I'm being introduced on your show. And yeah, so we can fire away with the more in-depth questions at this point, if you want, not a problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a great, you know, kind of life story leading up to that whole thing. So let me just start. I mean, I kind of jump around on these as they make sense, but I collected some from the Discord. And of course, anyone wants to use the super chat to ask a question anytime, please feel free. But first, like, why were you brought on board, and what's your experience that you can bring? And basically, what's your value proposition to the network, and what do you think you can do to further adoption and, I guess, increase in visibility and rankings of Dash in general, which is a very big, broad kind of question. But basically, what was it that you were brought there to do? What do you think you can offer? And, you know, yeah, I guess fire away. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so what's interesting is, right, with this position in this particular situation, it's kind of open-ended. And I mean that in a sense, right? What I've been brought in to do is problem solve, right? Mm-hmm. And those may be internal problems to DCG. They may be problems that the community brings up that maybe we're not doing a good job of. That could be direction for marketing, direction for business development. That could be helping Ryan on kind of special projects. Certainly we did all our own financing, not financing, but like accounting and stuff with our businesses. So, I mean, even lending Glenn a hand, I mean, I think Glenn is super talented and he's got everything under control, but another set of eyes that kind of has a background never hurts. And so I'm kind of a utility person. Now, that said, I'm going to be more heavily involved with marketing in the short term, right? With the kind of the departure of Arden, which, believe it or not, that actually has very little to do with me, right? I kind of actually want to make a point to that, right? Mm-hmm. It was never planned that I come in and replace Arden, or there were never any plans for kind of her departure as I'm coming in, but that's just where I find ourselves. So again, what's interesting to that, and I hope everybody kind of trusts me on this one, like, this is what I am. Like, I'm a builder, right? Like, I can handle this. Like, we can kind of rebuild marketing from scratch, reorient it where necessary, fix what's broken, and continue what's working. Like, that's not a problem for me. It's easy for me to sort through that stuff. So yeah, really utility, kind of all around utility, number one. Number two, I would like to point out that one of my successes, there's a couple, but one of the big ones with marketing the Surfboard Warehouse and certainly this Fanatic program we had, I had created a YouTube channel where I just started doing product reviews, and I haven't touched it in like 8 years. Yes, it does still exist. So you guys can go see me 10, 12 years ago if you want. This is what it is. But that YouTube channel, now keep in mind that a lot of when you do product reviews and the product gets old, you kind of take it down and put up the new one. But that YouTube channel, I think, is somewhere around 1.5 million, 2 million total views. And that literally was not something that was incredibly expensive to do. I mean, there was a startup cost, and then there was kind of a figuring out phase, like how do we do this the best. But then running, like, those videos didn't cost much to produce. And I think a lot of Amanda B, right? And her videos in the past and her personality. And I think there was a lot of success there with Dash. And so it doesn't need to be me, but it can be me. Like, if we decide that there needs to be a YouTube channel presence, which there definitely does, we got to figure out something with the YouTube channel. And I really see YouTube as a way to market Dash Direct, right? I know enough to know that a tool like that, you can talk about it and you're not going to get a ton of traction. But if you show it in the real world, if you show people what it can do, that's how you get like the reaction you want and the downloads you want and all of those things. So I think there definitely needs to be an element of some videos made around Dash Direct for sure. Among other things, right? Amanda B's descriptive videos were great. Some of that technology is outdated now, so maybe redo those. but so YouTube is a big component. Social media is a big component. There's a lot of things that can be done that aren't budget breakers. And then you get some momentum, and it's interesting. I was explaining to it this way, and I get it, and it makes sense to me, which is within DCG, as the coin price fluctuates, right? The department that's affected the most is marketing. And why is that? Well, you have a lot of fixed cost in other places. And so if the coin price drops, then you kind of, you know, got to lean out somewhere, and you don't want to lose staff and bring them back on or whatever. And so if we can gain some momentum early on, cost-effective momentum, right? Momentum begets momentum, and then the budgeting can kind of increase for marketing, and then you can get momentum faster. And so this really is a situation of getting the low-hanging fruit first and then building on that momentum. And I can see it in my head, like how it would work, how it's happening. So it's just a matter of me getting in here, getting comfortable, getting everybody on the same page and on board and excited. I mean, there is a problem that I'm sensing, like there's a disconnect between GCG and the community. There's a disconnect within the community itself sometimes that I've seen. And I've stayed away. You haven't seen me on Discord yet, right? You haven't seen me anywhere yet. And that's on purpose. I'm trying to feel where everybody's at, and the vibe is just down. It's kind of down and out. And yeah, I can change that. I can bring some excitement. I can gain some momentum, and yeah, we can get going in the right direction. I'm extremely confident in that.
Yeah. So, I mean, let me just add my 2 cents to the whole momentum thing. It's definitely like the crypto world lives and dies on momentum, and a lot of people in Dash saw the 2017 spike, which had a lot to do with the masternode staking thing, where you could buy it a masternode and be like rich for life kind of thing. And they kind of took the hype for granted, like this is the way it's always going to be, and they got disillusioned. But also, I will say that today Dash is in a way better position to handle and capitalize on that hype than before. So for example, the giant treasury, like in December 2017, Dash was playing with $10 million a month, right? That's not that bad. I mean, by today's standards, it might not be impressive, but back then it was gargantuan. And a lot of that because there wasn't the Dash Investment Foundation to actually get equity in companies we invested in. There was no way to capture that value, for example. And then you get a bunch of excited Dash users. I mean, I've personally physically set up over 1,000 people with wallets and gave them some Dash and all that stuff. And there's nothing to do with it, though, after that. But now anyone can use Dash Direct. And it's just, we're in a great position that all we need is that missing ingredient. Just get excitement, get hype, get people in, and then there's much more retention than maybe in previous years.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. It's funny, on a couple of calls, I've used the word hype, and I think crypto has created, within crypto specifically, actually a negative view on that word, where hype means a coin that like is only hype and can't back it up. And so I think we all need to take a step back and realize that Dash now has the technology to live up to the hype. So we need to embrace that, and we don't need to fluff it any more than necessary, but you don't have to. We just literally explain what Dash is, what's coming with platform, what's here with Dash Direct, instant send, right? Chain locks. I mean, it just goes on and on. And listen, their DAO, DA, you know, decentralized autonomous organization, like that's a buzzword right now. And Dash seems to be nowhere to be found. And we need to like figure out how to reassert ourselves with, hey, like, yeah, we came up with that 8 years ago. I mean, literally, like that was us.
Yeah.
And so it's not difficult once we get going in the right direction. I would like to point out something, and I kind of just learned this in doing my research and kind of competitors and what different people are doing. And I don't know how many, maybe some of you know this, maybe it's not news to you, but so our competition that's doing well right now, this was an eye opener. The minimum is a 1-to-1 ratio with developers versus marketing staff. So think about that. DCG, I think, has 35 developers right now, right? We have me as head of growth, which I'm not technically in marketing. We have one other person in there right now, and then Arden's departure. So that ratio, like, to me, that's it right there. I tell you exactly the problem. Like, we're running at a 15-to-1 ratio instead of a 1-to-1 ratio, or better than a 1-to-1 ratio. So I don't know what the solution there is, but we need some more investment in actual marketing stuff. And certainly, right, we're a decentralized organization. You have the marketing hub, and there's other elements there that we have, but we have to set this foundation right, and then we can move forward with tackling the community, the competition, and moving up in the rankings. And another thing that's interesting that I found out is that if you actually look at just mineable coins, I think we're in the top 10. And it sounds like, oh, you're just blowing smoke, but not really when you think about it. So since 2017, what's happened, right? You can't really do these ICOs anymore. And mining is kind of out of favor in some ways because of, you know, all the push for green energy and all this other stuff. And so, well, then what's happened? Well, you have these coins, and what they do is, oh, we're going to have a 10 billion coins, and we're going to airdrop 100 million. Well, great. Except when the 100 million go to $10 a coin, because that's all that's on the market, and you're multiplying, you know, 100, you're multiplying your 1 billion times $10 a coin. Like, of course the market caps are going to get gigantic. You're cheating the system. And so again, I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying those things need to be taken into account, because we're dealing with other models who, they play games with the market cap. I mean, I'm not sure if market cap should be redefined or what, but it's not incredibly accurate, you know?
Yeah. So before we jump into other stuff, there was a little super chat thingy right here. Let me pop it up. Congratulations on the new job, Chris. Were you directly hired by Ryan? What was the experience like?
Good question. So again, I kind of didn't take no for an answer. Got some phone calls. It was actually, I don't know how familiar everybody is with DCG, but a couple of phone calls with Robert in on that side of things, a phone call or two with Glenn, and a phone call or two with Ryan. So several phone calls before I was kind of given this ultimate test of, hey, here's some things we're struggling with. How would you fix them? And so the hiring process was very long. And I don't know if you noticed that before, but like I said, I think kind of, I may have originally applied with DCG the end of second quarter, or maybe beginning of third quarter last year. So between then, I mean, what, 4 to 6 months, I'd say, from when I applied to when I actually started. So not a short process, lots of back and forth, lots of vetting. I mean, from my experience, at least, DCG seems to hire right, because it's not like I walked in and, oh, yeah, you know, go for it.
Yeah. It's a little kind of a longer process. So just for a little clarification on, you know, it seems like you got sort of a catch-all title, more or less. Like you,
correct.
It's kind of like, which is a very startup type mentality. Like in a startup, you don't have one person do one thing. You have some like people wearing a million hats. Yeah. As far as like what you're doing, but as far as like managing a budget or a department, do you have any of that allocated to you, as in, do you have like a certain, like, say, business development or like marketing or a completely new thing, for example, like under you, and do you have like a specific sliver of the DCG budget like under you?
Well, so I definitely will, and I haven't even gone down the road of asking for any budget yet, because I want to make sure that before I ask for the budget, that I know what I want to tackle with it, right? There's so many things money could be spent on, but where's the most effective bang for your buck? And then once you get that, like, how much are we talking? And so the other part of the situation is too, is that I'm really kind of a horizontal line at the moment. So in other words, I'm not really over business development or product or marketing. I'm kind of a horizontal line with those departments. And so what that means is kind of like I'm more of a work with rather than like I'm over you. And so it's more of a like offering guidance, offering suggestions, getting the communications between the departments down, like getting everyone on the same page with different tasks. Because certainly business development, marketing work together, products got to be thrown in, timing gets all over the place. And so the communication and the goals and the vision, right? Just bringing all of that together across those departments, you know, and maybe that changes moving forward. I'm not sure. But as of right now, that's kind of how it's laid out. And then as far as my own particular budget, that's going to come with time, you know. Now, where do those initiatives go? That's another question. And do my initiatives get rolled under kind of business development and marketing and maybe product? Like, sure, they could. And so a lot of those things need to be flushed out. And it's really a lot of critical thinking on my part of where do we need to spend money? Who needs to take ownership of these projects and these initiatives? And how do I, cheerlead is the wrong word, but how do I come alongside who's ever doing things? And how do I help, right? What do we need? Like, what are we missing? What do we need? And how can I either provide that or how can I find it for you? Right?
Yeah. So kind of like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is. And again, the best way to explain it is, I mean, I know my strengths, right? I have a ton of energy. I'm super excited. Like, I can be somewhat of a catalyst that kind of gets everybody going again and excited again. But I'm a problem solver. And I did a lot of soul searching after I closed my businesses, right? Because here I am, I have to apply for jobs and at some point. And what am I? Like, what describes me? And so what I finally came up with is I am a high level problem solver. Like, that's what I am. Having my own business, you're a firefighter, you're putting out fires every day, sometimes small ones, sometimes massive ones. But at the end of the day, if you don't put out those fires and solve those problems, nobody else is going to do it. And so, yeah, so right, I need to identify problems, come up with creative solutions, and help get this thing on the right track. And I come in at such a unique time. I feel like it's kind of been, I don't know the word, but like Dash Direct, for those of you who haven't downloaded it and haven't downloaded the beta and haven't looked at the MasterCard feature, again, given I have not used it yet. I meant to today and got swamped and didn't get around to it.
I mean, it did but just come out yesterday. So yeah, it's not like, you had all month, dude. It's like, no.
Well, correct. But right, I'm head of growth. Like, I should be leading this stuff. Like, I should be, you should be asking me, like, hey, I'm
leadership
having problems.
Starts
or
by
what
doing first, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I tried. But again, right, like, what should I be doing? Should I be, like, having fun with one of our new products? Or should I be diving in, trying to solve some other problems in the background? And so I think everybody would agree on the same answer to that question. But yeah, I plan on doing that tonight. I have used the gift card portion. I found it fantastic. I've actually had several conversations with the guys over at Dash Direct, Marshall and some of his team. And there's some unique things I think we're going to be doing together, maybe me personally and DCG, to get some momentum there.
Marshall's an interesting guy. He's also a go side sort of dude.
Brilliant. And so I am just kind of thinking through the idea of what does it look like reverse engineering the marketing at this point. And so kind of what that means to me is you market Dash Direct, you back that into the Dash wallet and owning Dash. And I think that's a great way to get people in, get them excited, get them spending, get the transactions up, getting people buying and holding. I mean, the whole thing can kind of be backed in from Dash Direct. So kind of thinking about that, you know, how we might do that, as well as some other different marketing things.
Yeah. And I kind of agree to assert like with that, because when you talk about like pay, you know, like funnels, right? Like sales funnels and stuff, and you, where you get people along the line of things, the problem. And, you know, I've, you know, chatted with Arden plenty of times, and one of the challenges with marketing Dash, and I've sort of piece this together myself over the many years, you know, many years involved with Dash, like what, 6 years, I think now, has been Dash as a product is full of a bunch of micro products that all need to be adopted in unison in order to work. You need to own the unit Dash. You need to have access to the raw material, the network. You would need a Dash wallet. You need to store it in. You need a Dash on-ramp to acquire it, or else you need a salary service that pays you in Dash. Then you need some kind of a tool to help you use it, whether it be like a merchant map just showing where you can go and spend it, or whether it's a something like Dash Direct, which just is the gateway to every merchant. And so when you say, oh, Dash is awesome, look what you can do, it's like, okay, well, what do I do? You're like, well, better bring a checklist because it's this long, or you want to market any one of these things. Buy Dash. Okay, why? Well, because these next five things. All right. Download this wallet. Why? Because you can send Dash. I don't have Dash. Well, you should do this too. Hey, Dash Direct. Use this. Okay, but like, what else? Like, why would I, like, what are the steps to then do this? Sounds awesome. Well, first you do this, then you do that, then you do that, and you know, you get like a tooth of an extinct troll, and you mix it in a witch's brew and all this, and then finally you can, like, it is, it's challenging, and those challenges are getting tighter and tighter. I think one person, personally, I see a lot more people having cryptocurrency in general than ever before. So the swap it to Dash and then spend it. Or especially if you make money making NFTs, which is a huge thing now, swap some of those NFT monies. You're already in the matrix. You know, you're already in the crypto world. Just swap it to something you can spend.
Yeah. And I keep kind of toying with the message. And to me, the message is HODL when you want to, spend when you want to, right? That's what Dash gives you the opportunity to do now. Mm-hmm. Like, right, we all crypto enthusiasts, it's all about HODLing, but every once in a while, especially when you're up, like, you want to spend it, and that's not necessarily easy until now. So you know, there's something to that. And then listen, all these things you're talking about, all the different things, mm-hmm. different pieces of the puzzle, let's not forget platforms coming. So another huge piece of the puzzle, which is technologically heavy and deep, and if you think kind of explaining to someone crypto and or Dash is confusing, wait till we gotta explain platform to people, because it's another another realm of the universe that is Dash, I guess.
Yeah, it platform is another untapped natural resource, which is going to be its own kind of challenge to market. But thankfully, thanks to first off, DCG for making the Dash Pay app, which I've been beta testing forever, and also the Dash Incubator, which has been producing all kinds of apps, and I'm writing specs and doing UX advising on a few of them, because you know, there's just a million cool things. Those are the end user products. People don't need to care about Dash platform as long as the apps work. I did get one more super chat right here. What crypto-related marketing experience do you have? I love that energy, but sometimes it takes a little bit more than that. So obviously you've done a lot of marketing and promo and stuff like that as part of business in the past. And, you know, especially the YouTube thing. And I do remember you telling me, you know, the story about, you know, making the video go viral on some like product thingy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but like, obviously your crypto experience, specific experience, which when I entered crypto, I had no experience, right? I had to build up from nothing. But like, and as a fun aside, my first job as a journalist ever, because I was always, I wrote a lot, I could write. My first job as a journalist was day one at Cointelegraph when I started living on crypto. And so I learned the crypto space and journalism hand in hand, kind of.
Right.
But so, yeah. So do you have any explicit marketing experience for crypto itself?
No, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that somewhere in my background I've been marketing crypto secretly. But at the end of the day, to me, selling is selling. Like if you have a product, selling is selling, and marketing is marketing. You need to understand mm-hmm. your audience. And listen, is there a learning curve for me? Sure, absolutely. No denying mm-hmm. that. But I know how to sell. So all I have to do is figure out like the target audience. And I mean, let's be real. I'm a crypto enthusiast too. So it's not that much of a stretch, because I know the things that I enjoy, and I have friends that are into crypto, and I know the things that they enjoy. And I'm kind of, I have some friends and they're probably listening that are kind of dabbling in crypto. And mm-hmm. what's interesting is I've been kind of using them as a use case, just even my own personal experience, but especially now that I've gotten in here at DCG. But so in talking to them about crypto and kind of bringing them along crypto story, right? The reactions are kind of like, okay, that's kind of cool, but like I couldn't get them to like, let's do this, let's get involved with crypto. It's just like there's this hesitation. But let me tell you that as soon as I showed them Dash Direct, yes, that was the aha moment. That was them getting excited. That was them, okay, how do I buy Dash? Like, how do I use this? How do I do it? Like, because I think people get, especially with all the chaos we're seeing, right? Like the up in Canada with the convoy and them shutting down the money, like everybody, even your clueless person, right, sitting at home now, starting to understand that you can be locked out of your money. Like, it's not a given. Your money in the bank account, your access can be revoked. And so I think when that hits you and mm-hmm. that starts to shock you a little bit and you start to self-reflect and ask yourself, well, what can I do to prevent this? It's crypto. And yeah. So now if you can live there and spend here, it's a no-brainer. Like, that's an easy sell. And that's how I feel with Dash too. Like, sometimes you get these unique situations where the product sells itself, and that's what we have. And so we mm-hmm. just have to creatively get it in front of the masses, you know?
Yeah.
That's well, what I would say. And back to your point too, one quick thing. Yeah, that story is crazy. We had a company when I owned my business that was releasing a new product, and they let us kind of reveal it on my YouTube channel. And I even made the discussion, I had the discussion with them beforehand. I said, hey, listen, like if I shoot this, like this is pretty big deal. Like, I think it's going to go viral. Are you okay with that? Yeah, that's not a problem. Like, yeah, we'd love it for you to release this product for us, whatever. So we shot this video, and I had my video editor guy on call and all this stuff. And it was edited and up within 4 hours when we shot it. And so let's say by noon on that day, it was up. By that night at midnight, it had 16,000 views on YouTube. And the CEO of this company was calling my cell phone personally and woke me up and was basically saying, hey, listen, we appreciate this, but you got to take the video down. And I said, what do you mean take the video down? What are you talking about? You guys said I could shoot this. Well, yeah, but we're afraid you're becoming the face of our brand. And like, we don't want that. And so it's like, okay, so let me understand this. You want the publicity, but you want the publicity in the way you want the publicity. Like, that, it doesn't work like that. When you have something going viral, you let it go. Like, you know, so anyway, we took that video down. I just find that is ironic, because I can bring that. Like, we can get like some viral momentum going, and it's just a matter of figuring out what works, like what's going to catch on. You know, and so it may not be the way. I mean, I'm just saying this straight up, like to the community of Dash. Mm-hmm. It may not be in the way that you necessarily want, but at the end of the day, if the means is almost irrelevant, right? The end is what you want. So figuring out the means, like, you just have to be a little fluid. And if okay, I don't really kind of want it to be marketed like this or whatever, but at the end of the day, if the results are in the pudding and it's moving up coin market cap, you go with it. You know, you don't try to fit the growth into your little box. You try to open up the box and let the growth do its thing, you know?
So. Yeah, that's definitely, I guess, a good message. And for example, this is one thing that I've been, a lot of people in the crypto world are a little like, I mean, I think that things are balancing out a little bit more, but there have been times when people were like, you know, again, hesitant to do hype, like the word marketing was like a slur almost. Like, yeah, people used to insult Dash because they had a budget to like hire someone to do videos. Oh, that's just a marketing coin. Or like, we don't actually pay. Like, it's insane. For example, not too long, I think we're in a new leaf though, because there's a lot of people in the community, crypto community, who look down on the project Hex, because, you know, they say like it's a pyramid scheme or a scam or a bunch of things like that. And, you know, I'm not going to say much on that, but basically that's a natural opportunity for intersection with Dash in a certain way, not for any sort of official partnerships necessarily, but I would be more than happy to go on any sort of Hex channel and tell them, look, you made a pile of money on this stuff. You could just swap it for Dash and spend it anywhere. And just, well, you talk to the Hex people. I didn't endorse the project. I didn't say, I believe this to be, go out there and buy. I didn't say any of that stuff. I just said, hi guys, you did this. This is how it works. Come on over. And it's like, that's growth, right? That's not, no one needs to like the criticism, like, oh, you did it the wrong way. Okay. As long as you're not doing, like, as long as one is not wrecking anything, as long as you're not like, you got us delisted from every exchange out there. Oh, crap. Like, as long as you're not doing something like that, I don't think anyone's going to have any complaint with that.
Yeah. I mean, again, the means to the end, like, what do you want? Do you want it marketed in the way that you see it unfolding? Or do you want the end result, which is growth that we deserve, in my opinion? I mean, Dash deserves much better than spot number 80 on CMC. And it's, again, it's not rocket science. Let's figure out what reaches the target audience. And that's the direction we move in. And yes, that takes a little of experimenting and it takes a little bit getting out of your comfort zone. And while we're on this topic too, I just, so that people aren't shocked, if this happens, I'm not saying it's going to, but if this happens, I am not removing the idea of, now that we don't have a head of marketing, of bringing in a marketing agency, right? I mean, I can already kind of hear it in the community. Are you kidding me? But listen, like, what do you want? Do you want us to ascend from spot 80, or do you want us to stay here? And at the end of the day, okay, and again, somewhere I feel like I'm qualified. I worked probably half a dozen or more marketing agencies in my tenure. I know the red flags. I know the yellow flags. I know when to cut bait, and I know when to move forward. So yes, if that route ends up being the most cost-effective solution, I mean, and let's be honest, what does everyone want? Does everyone want DCG to come to the master nodes and ask for some outrageous amount of money because we want 1-to-1 ratio of marketers with developers? I mean, the cost on that is insane. Or would you want a budget that makes more sense, but it might involve a marketing agency? And I'm not necessarily saying
results. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying any either way is baked in, but I am saying I'm not taking it off the table just because it may, you know, make some people uncomfortable. So, you know,
well, that's the thing about like a free market environment in general. If you run a business and someone says you're doing it wrong, well, the market tells you if you're doing it wrong, you know, you fail, right? And you can try something else. And if it works, it works. And I think a lot of, as a customer period of a lot of things, you know as well as I do that you can't throw money and get results. It just doesn't work. No. Money is an amplifier for results. But even when you hire someone who's an expert and you're not an expert, you have to work with the person. You have to be very communicative as a customer, as the client, to say, I want this. This looks good. That looks bad. You hire an interior designer who's a professional for your house. They're not going to just make it look great. They can, but you have to tell them, this looks good. That doesn't look good. I'm thinking this direction, et cetera. And so I think a lot of the allergy towards external firms has been, a lot of them have just sort of been kept on retainer, almost just sort of like throw them a bag of money and then that's it. And no relationship with them, no demands, no. And in fact, like, I mean, let me just give it like an anecdotal thing. Back in the earlier days, myself and Mark Mason, some other people, we worked for a DFO called Dash Force, but we ran a publication called Dash News, which is like an internal news publication because Dash was getting no coverage anywhere. And so we later expanded towards PR in the end. But in the beginning, the PR firm that that DCG was hiring, Waxman PR, was frequently sending out press releases to everyone except for the one publication in the world that's dedicated to cover Dash News, us. And we got on calls with them. We got on whatever, and they kept on, oh shit, we send this out manually. We keep forgetting. And just like, I remember just the frustration, just like, we can't get anything of substance from these guys. And it kind of got the feeling of, you know, it was like a set it and forget it. They just got paid to do PR. And then that's it. And they weren't like, hey, we want a story here. Can we do this? Hey, we want to do that. It wasn't that active. And so, I mean, obviously not making any assumptions, but based on everything you said today, you don't seem like the kind of person that lets that happen. You seem very involved and relational, you know?
Exactly right. And let's make no mistake here. Mm-hmm. This isn't like I am the head of marketing and I would be hiring potentially a firm to help me, right? This isn't a horizontal arrangement that's going to happen with me. If we end up going with a marketing firm, you, if anyone listening, can hold me to the fire, because it's going to be my job to hold them to the fire. And like I said, I understand at this point yellow flags and red flags, and I know when to cut bait. And that stuff can happen, because you can make wrong decisions. And I'm not saying it won't happen, but what I am saying is I'm going to be the first one to say, hey, this isn't working. You get like one opportunity to fix it. And if you don't, we're done. And that's just the way it is. And there's not going to be waste, and we're going to get what we paid for, and we're going to hold any marketing company accountable to some results, which in essence is holding me accountable to results. And I understand all of those things. And so, yeah, I wouldn't, anyone who's kind of looking at it as a scary thing, I would pose it to you this way. First of all, Dash has had some PR companies, but never really a marketing agency. And those are two very different things. And second of all, right, so far, we haven't been able to successfully do this. So it's time, could be time, to try something different. And so I'm not afraid to do that. And if different doesn't work, we'll try something else different. And we will get there, and we will figure out what reaches our target audience the best. And we will have organic growth once we get going. Now, is it going to take time? Sure, it's going to take time. But once we get momentum, momentum begets momentum. And, you know, and somebody told me once, like, becoming an overnight millionaire takes 10 years. I mean, that's exactly right. Like, you're going to look at the situation in 2 years and you're going to say, oh my God, you know, we're in the top 20 or whatever, and we're all celebrating. But it's in that moment, and you kind of forget that it took us 2 years to get there. Like, it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it can happen, and it will happen. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me hit so we actually have a queue of super chat questions, but let me just hit before we run into that, because you're talking about work, what works and stuff. This was a question over here, which basically you're saying about like success and stuff. What performance metrics can we hold you to? Basically, obviously you're talking about all the stuff that you're going to do, all the jobs and everything like that. And you're going to do what works and be accountable for what doesn't work and all that. But have we figured out any like specific metrics you're thinking of? So like, for example, market cap ranking is a great one, but it's hard to pin that on one person or even entirely, or even one entity entirely. But I don't know if it's like, social media scores on like Lunar Crush, for example, that tracks a lot of these crypto projects. Is it website views, wallet downloads, Dash Direct downloads? Is it Dash trading volume? Is it like, what are kind of some of these metrics you're kind of thinking of that when you're going to look at the whiteboard, you're going to look at the clock every single day, like the transaction count or whatever. And you're just going to like look at that every single day and be like, this is, you know, got to get those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers in this racket. You know, you got to do that whole thing. What are you kind of looking at that you're going to use to decide whether everything's going to be a success or not?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with a lot of it, is especially if we're talking about what is the price of Dash and what is the coin market cap ranking. That comes as a byproduct of a lot of those metrics you just mentioned. Yes. So I think that especially at first, as we transition into a new way of thinking or a paradigm shift here, you kind of keep your eye on all of those metrics and realize that those are leading indicators of the potential price action. So you do these things, it's not like they're going to be in tandem. We're going to see some positive growth with social media. We're going to see some positive growth with transaction volume. We're going to see some positive growth with number of transactions and downloads of Dash Direct and downloads of our wallet, right? Those things are going to come first, because then the investors, don't think they're not looking at that stuff. And when the big time investors look at the same metrics we're looking at, and they see, wow, in the last 6 months, they've doubled their social media presence, or they've tripled their wallet downloads or whatever, that's when big money takes notice. That's when they jump in. And again, this kind of idea that momentum begets momentum, they start jumping in, then the average crypto that's, you know, Dash user that's been buying starts buying more and starts holding instead of selling because you just have this momentum and the price is going up. And so I think you nailed it in that I don't think you, as much as we want to, and as much as we want to define coin market cap as success and the price of Dash as success, you're setting yourself up for disappointment because all of the things you mentioned have to come first, and then let that byproduct fix itself. Let that one work itself out, but control the things you can control. The social media exposure, the involvement with the community feeling and the community engagement. And right, we need to work on ourselves. And I say that in the most humble way possible. And I'm including DCG, right? There's things that are broken that we need to fix internally across all spectrums, because you don't want someone to come in here, look under the hood and see infighting, right? That's not gonna move the price. That's not gonna move the needle. Like, we're gonna turn people off that come in here and they see, you know, disorganization and infighting, and there they go out the back door and they're not gonna get involved with it. So we need to control the variables we can, look at the metrics you mentioned, and let the price do its thing, right? This is the price is going to move based on product and based on how we're doing. So let's fix the things we can fix.
Yeah. My personal thing that I'm sorting, because there's just so many different metrics, and especially crypto, so many of these can be gamed and faked and stuff. The things that I'm looking for on my own side, which, I mean, I have a narrow focus right now personally, like what I want to, but I am looking for basically Dash products, increase like growth of usage of Dash products specifically. Like, not, you know, the metric, the transactions, like I can bounce transactions back and forth between my five wallets or whatever it is all day long and pump up some numbers. But correct. Which is funny, because one thing that Bitcoin Cash people like to brag about today is as a percentage of market cap, the average transaction value. Which is like, okay, well, so you have like a billionaire. All you have to do is move his stash over once, and that just like dumps, you know, for like a fraction of a cent, and that gets that up. Right. But so like I'm focusing on like Dash Direct downloads is the big one. Dash Direct downloads and usage is the big one. Whenever we can, whenever the ThorChain integration goes, Dash trading volume on ThorChain, as well as liquidity on ThorChain, all those kinds of things specifically to ThorChain. And obviously beyond that, just raw transactions, which is again super easy to game, and we'd have been disappointed in that with in the past, but just that's a good thing to keep a side eye on. And I also like, you know, I mean, obviously official Dash wallet downloads, any other Dash products downloads and usage, and like trading volume, like people buying it. And of course people do wash trading and stuff like that sometimes too, but like just all those together, growth, right? And also, for example, CrowdNode is that like fractionalized masternode service that just now hit its, like, it reached its previous all-time high of pooled masternodes that people have on the service, and it keeps growing. And so CrowdNode, how many masternodes is CrowdNode running? That's another metric. Like, all these product just growth metrics is just what I'm personally looking at, but I'm sure there's a million more like social media metrics and stuff. And obviously on our social media accounts that the Marketing Hub specifically runs, we do keep an eye on those metrics, but ultimately those metrics are just are kind of a focus of the bounties themselves. The overall goal is just those like growth metrics in the products.
Well, let's even talk about a metric that maybe isn't so accessible, but like, how are people using the website? Like, that's a big one. We can gain a lot of insight into how much traffic do we have at the website? And listen, I'm just going to say this to give everyone that's listening some perspective here. My websites that I had per year had 2.2 million unique viewers a year to our website. And I mean, that's comparable to things that are going on now. So, I mean, I can grow that number. I'm used to these numbers. I don't come from a world where, you know, the numbers and the things that I was dealing with are so far on the lower level than Dash. It's not like that at all. Like, I'm very comfortable with a lot of these numbers and a lot of things, these things we're talking about. I mean, I've been here before, like in, yes, in a different industry, granted, but I've been here before. So yeah, I can look at this stuff. I can make sense of it. I can make some actionable decisions, and then I can quickly gather based on data from the website and all the things you mentioned. Okay, we're going to continue with this, or we're going to pivot some. And that's how this works. And in talking to some people, I even get the impression that within crypto, you need to possibly adjust your marketing strategy on a weekly basis. That's how fast this industry moves. So listen, like, everybody better be comfortable with change and comfortable with tweaking things when they need to be tweaked, because we have to. That's how quickly things are changing, right? And when platform gets involved, like, let's ratchet that thing up another level, because then you're talking about all kinds of integration with other projects and what are they up to and what, why would they use it, and are they, how they're using it now, is that how they're going to be using it next week? I mean, we have to be agile. Have to be.
Yeah, that makes sense. Look at the last, so we had like three super chats in a row that were a lot, like we kind of answered a lot of that stuff. For example, one was, welcome, Chris. Does Chris find it necessary to use an external marketing agency, and will you be involved in that? You already covered that. And this one, there's a nuance to this one. It says, what criteria would you need to meet to be considered successful? We were just on that. And what time frame do you give yourself to meet this criteria? So, I mean, obviously over like a 10 year span or something, that'd be nice. But like, when are you, these metrics we just finished talking about, what are you kind of looking at as far as when you should start to see noticeable changes in that?
Right. So kind of my short-term focus, and hopefully this can be appreciated by everyone here, right? I understand a lot of you have been with Dash for years and since the beginning, and understand the history and understand the growth and where we've come from and all these different things. My first primary focus is getting up to speed with you. Like, I'm not going to be able to move forward until I understand the past. So that's just a necessary evil that has to be done first and foremost before I try to take a step forward and do any leading or any pointing in a certain direction, because if I don't understand where we've come from, I'm going to have no clue where we're going. So I'm kind of coming out of that phase right now, but certainly still in it. I definitely need to make myself accessible to the community. I understand Discord is a big part of that. I actually have set up a channel on Telegram. So I think it's t.me/Chris Huff. Somehow I got my name. So anybody's welcome to follow me there. That'll be an interesting channel, because it'll be kind of, about Dash, but about crypto in general and directions and other interesting things that are going on. So we can stay up to speed on maybe where we should be moving next. And so you're welcome to kind of follow my thoughts there. And I'm going to try to get involved as much as possible. But there's this idea too of like, what is it the community wants to see? Do they want to see somebody that's engaging with them 24/7? Because that doesn't bode well for the things that they need to be doing for their job to help move the coin forward. So there is a balance there. And I know that kind
too
of
too much navel gazing, you know?
Right. And I know kind of Ryan is taking a little bit of slack right now for not seeming accessible, but I would like to point out that my point of view is Ryan is brilliant. And just because he may not seem accessible or everyone thinks they don't see him as much as they should, that doesn't mean that things aren't happening. I mean, that's a kind of ridiculous correlation to make. I actually, the guys over, Marshall over at Dash Direct, he actually told me the other night that he credits Ryan with the initial concept of Dash Direct. I mean, so those are the kind and quality ideas that are coming from Ryan in particular. And then we got to implement those. And now it's here. And now part of my job is getting it out there, right? That's how this goes. But so there's got to be some kind of balance between how much time is spent where. And I would want to believe that everybody would want me to spend my time figuring out these problems, figuring out a path forward. So, you know, that's what I'm going to try to do first and foremost. So,
yeah, heading up growth. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
So the last question is funny. You mentioned Ryan, that was on the Super Chat kind of list was, what do you see as the CEO's job versus your job as head of growth? And I mean, I know you
okay,
mentioned
so that. let's put this this way. And again, there's a lot of things that are still still kind of being worked through. But a lot of this is ideas and different directions and different thoughts. But if it's decided that like we need a public face, and there's lots of opinions pre-me, right, even saying anything, that Dash does. Dash needs some more outward public appearances and someone to be a presence. And if Ryan wants to head down and do his work and come up with fantastic products and ideas and lead kind of internally within DCG, and if my job becomes more of an outspoken role on YouTube or in these places, I'm fine with that. And maybe that's what it is. And so I can do that. I can also pass that off to somebody else, and I can put my head down and try to get work done. So again, I am a jack of all trades. I can fit wherever I am best suited, and I can take on that role, and I don't have a problem with it. But the first step is figuring out, you know, what's needed. And the next step is like, okay, do we hand that off? Do I take care of that? You know, what is the situation and what's the best path forward? So, yeah, I mean, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, I think so. So I would say anyone who has any remaining questions, please throw them out there now, because we're going to wrap up pretty soon. But what I would ask is, where can everyone find you to like keep in contact with you? Obviously, it's not going to be like your chief babysitter now and have to deal with everyone and stuff. But people are like, oh, dude, you talked about this like growth strategy here. Like, I know just the thing that can help. I want to like, you know, help out or whatever. Yeah. Or just how should people, you know, reach you or follow your stuff?
Yeah, so absolutely. I'm going to be getting more heavily involved in Discord. So probably within the next 2 weeks, once I'm settled in, I want to make sure that I understand. And I, like, a lot of times you don't know what you don't know. So that's what I'm working through right now, right? So once I feel incredibly comfortable in my own skin here, you'll be able to find me in Discord. So that's coming. Like I said, I'm a big Telegram fan, huge. I think Telegram and crypto, in my mind, kind of go hand in hand until we get some blockchain based, you know, social that can't be like manipulated or whatever. But so Telegram, I think it's t.me/Chris Huff. Like I said, I think that's kind of the channel that I set up. And I think the channel name is The Digital Revolution. So I set that up so people can kind of follow me there. So those are going to be my two main things, ways to contact me. I mean, I've just never been a huge social media person as far as Twitter and Facebook and these things, because you just get canceled. Like, it doesn't make sense to support them.
That's one of the most like 2022 things I've heard in a while. It's like, yeah, I'm just not big on Twitter because you just get canceled.
It doesn't make sense for me to sit over there and support a platform that, right, like, crypto people, like, we should realize, like, we don't agree with that. Like, we're for freedom, and when people start getting canceled and opinions, and I don't even care if it's an opinion I agree with or not. Like, if we disagree, that's cool. You still shouldn't be canceled, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, so I just have never brought myself around to those platforms, but certainly Telegram is the best way. You can find me there. Once I'm on Discord, I'll be accessible there. You know, eventually I'm sure my email will get out, and so people are welcome to email me and discuss things there. But yeah, I would just say, let me get settled, and then you'll eventually start seeing me and find ways that you can get me if you need to talk to me about something.
The Twitter censorship thing reminds me of probably one of the biggest flagship apps that's not the wallet built on Dash platform is going to be Djembe, which is a censorship resistant Twitter. So Dash is solving your problem. You definitely have to be on that thing when it comes out. But the last question I saw circling around, I'm just going to make sure nothing new came in the super chat. But Great Wolf said, hi, Great Wolf. This is a question for Chris. Ooh, I accidentally got it right. But basically, he just said, is there anything, like with Arden's departure and all the stuff she worked at, is there anything that she built or worked on that you can actually like Here, let me actually read this. I sort of missed the thing. Is there anything Arden has set up in the time that she was with us that maybe you could reuse or continue, i.e. not starting from scratch or wasting resources? Kind of a little bit more open-ended, but yeah, still.
No, absolutely. Right. I mean, everybody's got their own flavor. And again, like, I haven't been hired in marketing. Like, that's not my position. Whether it's a new head of marketing or a marketing agency, somebody's going to be brought in that I more or less coordinate with, drive initiatives with, work with, bounce ideas off of, all of those things. So in the interim, yes, I'm filling that gap. I'm comfortable filling that gap. But I wasn't hired to be head of marketing at Dash. And again, just so we're clear, I was not hired to replace Arden in any way. Those are just two circumstances that seem to have collided around the same time. Yeah. But yes, they're right. I understand kind of what's going on there with Arden and their strong opinions either way on Arden, but there are things that definitely we can build on top of. And there are things that I feel maybe we should start over and reevaluate. And a lot of those projects have directly been handed to me to look at, and all those initiatives. And so I got to sort through some of those and figure out, the exact question, like, is the money worth it? Is there some return here? What does the data suggest? I'm a big data person. With the way the internet is and with the way crypto is, if anyone's throwing money at anything and then don't return some data to support or not support what it is they've done, I mean, they're doing something wrong. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Honestly, I'm just going to say it. You're an idiot in the digital age if you throw money at something and there's no data and you don't have any data to. And listen, if it fails, you have the data that it fails. I'm not saying come here, you spent some money, show me the data that, like, this was super successful. It's not always going to be that way. But if the data says it fails, okay, let's scrap it and move on. Like, that's, but the data needs to be there. So I'm going to take a look at data points and different initiatives. There was an initiative in Miami. There were some online initiatives and different things that happened. And I'm going to look at the data. And if the data suggests that Arden was on a roll in a certain area, we'll extend those programs. And if the data suggests that it wasn't working, yeah, we're going to stop them immediately and reallocate the resources. I mean, that's just, it's data driven. It's not hard. Let's look at the data. Let's see the initiatives. Let's compare them to the data, and let's decide if we move forward on them or scrap.
Yeah, which problem. That's a fantastic place to wrap up and segue to this thing. If this podcast, listening to this show, has caused you to say, I'm going to go download the Dash Direct app, please do so by going to dashdirect.page.link/DCN, which is Digital Cash Network's letters. And then I'll be able to see how many people this show particularly drives into downloading Dash Direct app. So
I'm going to piggyback off of that. And regardless of seeing any of that data, anyone listening to this show that is even remotely interested in Dash, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't download the app. I mean, yeah. I'm not kidding. As soon as my first experience with it was after I got hired at DCG, and it took a while. I have two kids, so it's not easy to plan nights out and stuff. But we ended up going to dinner, like the celebratory dinner of getting the job, right? So we went to Texas Roadhouse. And we all eat. I'd offer to pay. My in-laws were there. The waitress, I tell the waitress we can get the check. And as she's walking away, I start thinking to myself, it would be super cool to pay this bill in particular with Dash, right? And I kind of dismissed it. And then on second thought, I'm like, well, maybe Dash Direct, maybe it's in there. I look in the app. Sure enough, Texas Roadhouse was in there. Typed in, check came back, type in my amount, type in my tip, hit send. It pulled up. She scanned my phone and it was done. And I will stand by this. The Dash Direct app is one of the most UI user experience friendly apps I've used within all of crypto. I mean, it just, it worked how it should.
I agree. And even of course, I had to pull this up as a data point. I even saved 5.75% on that bill, which is awesome. Yeah. And I do agree about Dash Direct is a very intuitive, smooth experience. And I've been testing crypto wallets as well. And one of the things I do is, like, when you have your phone unlocked, before you even open that, when you press open a crypto wallet, I time it. how long does it take until I open up the scanner to scan a QR code? And the runner up in the app is Zek Wallet, ZEC, the Zcash wallet is a very light wallet. And so I, from there, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the scanner's ready to get. That's pretty good. The Dash one is like 2.5 to 3 seconds. I go open one, and I can start scanning. And that is huge as far as like that timing thing. So I'm paying attention to these kinds of things. And I do time myself, like, how long does it take to get a payment through? Because you have to not piss off everyone at the coffee shop, you know? You got to, like, get it going.
Let's make no mistake about this. All of this technology is piggybacked off of Instant Send and the master nodes. And the thing is that I could be misspeaking here, but I don't think there's any other blockchains that can do this at this point, because to your point, when I'm sitting there paying my bill for Roadhouse, if when I send my Dash or I hit buy on the Dash Direct app and that transaction takes 3.5 minutes to confirm before my gift card is purchased, like, just throw your whole phone in the trash. Like, that's just, it doesn't even make sense, you know? So, yeah. But
welcome Dash, to my life living off Bitcoin.
I hit purchase and barcode's up, like, and the waitress isn't even back yet. So yeah, to your credit, beyond what you said, anyone listening to this right now, go get the Dash Direct app and try it, because you're going to be pumped and you're going to be telling all your friends, and we can get these downloads started, and any momentum is momentum. So let's do it.
That's a fantastic place to wrap up. Thanks everyone for watching. Thank you very much, Chris, for being on, especially, I wouldn't say it's like short notice, but it's definitely like jumping right in the fire, you know. It's like,
oh yeah, this whole experience has been trial by fire for sure, but I'm up for the task. If everyone just bears with me for another couple of weeks, you'll start seeing some different things happening, and then results will follow.
Yeah, so that's what everyone loves to hear. So yeah, thanks for everyone for watching. Obviously, please like, comment, share, subscribe, throw a little donation in there, even if you missed the super chat, if you liked what's going on. Yeah, and now it's this thing I call the after party, which when I used to do this podcast on the Dash News channel before I just moved it to my own channel when I started doing my own stuff, Brian, shout out to Mastermind, wanted to just keep it going afterwards. He just said, let's just do like a hangout. And so we did a little hangout, you know, just like this, except not recorded, in a bunch of people just hang out and like have a couple beers and just chat. I'm sure we all remember the Zoom happy hours of the famous early stages of the pandemic and stuff, but we were doing that stuff years before that. So we were doing it before it was cool, like everything else with Dash. So there's going to be an after party after this. If anyone listening like wants in on this, all roads lead through the Dash Talk Discord. If you go to staydashy.com, you get into Dash Talk Discord and just start asking around, hey, where's this after party? Or if you're not a Discord person and you just know where to contact me, you can just message me directly. I'm, you know, either by my name or at the Desert Links just about everywhere, and just say, hey, I went into the after party, can I get in? And then there we go. And it might go to the wee hours of the morning with a bunch of people coming in and out. It might not. I'm going to join in like a half hour or so, because I need to eat dinner first, but then I'll be on. So
unfortunately,
final words.
With a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old that will be back any moment, I think my partying after hours are behind me.
That's fine. You spent plenty of time on this thing anyway. But well, anyway, thanks everyone for watching. And yeah, I'll see some of you in the after party, but the rest of you guys, I'll definitely just be seeing you around. So
yeah, have a good one. Appreciate everybody out there. We're all in this together. Let's make it happen.
Yep. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and donate to support the show by going to my Cointree page. That's cointr.ee/thedesertlinks, and leave a message with your donation. Check out the show's sponsors. Live on Crypto with BitRefill. Buy absolutely anything with crypto with Shop and Bit. Avoid content censorship with Odyssey. Protect your privacy online with NordVPN. Get paid to search with Presearch. All links are in the show notes.